Thank you, Alan. Tonight, our main speaker is Mike B. Please help me give him a warm welcome.
Thank you very much. My name is Michael, and I am a grateful recovering alcoholic. Wow. Let's see if I can get myself. Somewhere it talks about us, never being organized, and I want to. I exemplify that with every fiber of my being. I'm going to close this just a little bit. I like the breeze, but maybe the noise gets to be a bit much. I have a sobriety date, and that is May 1st of 2008. God willing, in 2 weeks I will have 8 years of continuous sobriety. I say that because going out is part of my story. I originally got sober on January the 9th of 2002. Which I will talk a little bit about that in a moment. But after 3.5 years, I became convinced that I was cured, thought it would be okay to have a glass of wine with dinner, and that set off a 2.5 year run that nearly killed me. I was grateful, and I remain grateful to have made it back into these rooms. So, digressing from that for just a moment, I encourage everyone to get a hold of one of these. This is a big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and start reading it as soon as possible. I keep a highlighter and something to write with close at hand. I like to highlight expressions or phrases that are very important to me. I also like to underline things. I put little boxes around things. I use little arrows. I make little comments in the margins. It's kind of interesting because, as we go through this process, I got sober at the Freedom Group in Lompoc, right? And they had a very good book study meeting, Wednesday evenings, I believe it was. And so my sponsor, I have a sponsor as well, my sponsor back then encouraged me, actually sort of required me, to go to a book study meeting and go through the book that way. I encourage you to give that a try. If you stick around, and I hope that you do, there's a couple of other books that I think you'll want to get a hold of as well. This is the Daily Reflections. And this is the 12 and 12. For those of you not aware, Bill Wilson wrote this many years after this was published, and in it elaborates on each of the steps and each of the traditions. And again, it is just an absolute wealth of, highlights, underlines, comments. Year by year, they accumulate. It's the funniest thing. I swear this is true. Maybe you've experienced this as well. Somebody will read from the big book, and it will be something that you never heard before in your sober life, as if those words had magically just appeared on those pages. It still happens. As many years as I've been into these books, I still hear things I would swear were not in the book until like that moment. So maybe it's part of the magic around here, I don't know. I also use, by the way, you might have noticed, I use things like business cards, post-it notes. I think a toothpick literally just fell out of this one that I use. I should probably throw that away. but, hey, I might need it, who knows? This has been, when I was early in sobriety, but you still go to meetings and people will read from this. It's a meeting in case all else fails. Nobody can think of anything to say. You look up today's date and I guarantee you there's going to be something interesting in there to talk about. But this became my gateway into the big book, kind of a other way to get into it. Because Typically, they draw on, you know, quotes from the big book, and then they have a discussion about that comment, and it's very stimulating. Anyway, these three books, I think, are essential to sobriety, and they have proven to me time and again that that's the case. So, kind of getting back on track here. So I have a sobriety date. I have a sponsor, although I don't speak to him probably as much as I should. He's got about 32 years of sobriety, so he's very helpful. If there's something that I have some confusion about, you know, there's people that I can talk to. I know people right here in this room, thank God. And they're actually willing to talk to me. They're willing to listen to what I have to say. And if I need, like, guidance or input on something, I don't know. Alcoholics, it seems, sometimes have this kind of thing where I will think about something and it will just sound brilliant, absolutely brilliant, as it rattles around in my head. And then I'll make that fatal mistake of opening my mouth and actually saying it, and it'll come out like, what in the hell is this guy talking about? And that's like me talking about myself. So I also have a sponsee. Over the years, I've had many sponsees. At this time, I have a gentleman down in Lompoc who just got 4 years. I'm very proud of him. And I think that's part of my sober life today, you know? Be aware of what my sobriety date is, have a sponsor, be of service to other people. I've also served on a number of different committees here in the 52nd District, right in this town, in this area. And I've been a secretary of meetings in the course of my sober life. And if somebody calls or has a question or needs something, I'm there to listen. I absolutely feel like giving back to other people, whether they have less sobriety than me or more sobriety than me. Someone that I know in this program recently went out with 20 plus years. It happens, right? So I'm well aware, since I have been out before, that unless I stay on my guard, it could happen to me again. God forbid, and here's, you know, one of those key aspects of this program. Today's the day that I'm going to absolutely positively stay sober. So there's something that a lot of groups read at the beginning of meetings, and it's a passage from the beginning of chapter 3. It's more about alcoholism. A lot of stuff that I'm kind of one of those AA people that really believes in what's going on in the book. I think it's important. Some of these things are like, whoa, what the heck? It says in here, if I can find it, of course, that would be very helpful. Okay. The idea that somehow, someday, I will control and enjoy my drinking is the great obsession of every abnormal drinker, right? The persistence of this illusion is astonishing. Many of us pursue it into the gates of insanity or death. And I gotta just say that, okay, so I'm coming up on 8 years, big deal. You know, I got a few days eked out of sobriety. The fact of the matter is, I'm aware in the back of my mind that every now and then I'm going to get this urge, I'm going to get this impulse to have a drink or to just get out of my own head, right? And my go-to way to get that done is alcohol and drugs, also part of my story. And so in a sense, I'm coming to meetings, I'm working the steps, I'm doing all these things that I talk about in order to stay aware of my alcoholism, right? Lest I delude myself one more time that having a drink somehow might be a good idea. So that you understand that I am one of us, I wanted to say about my own upbringing that my parents were not alcoholics. The truth of it is that they were really quite wonderful people. My father was something of a workaholic, and my mother could be a rageaholic at times. But alcohol was not a problem that they had. And I don't think I was one of those people you hear about that was born alcoholic. I didn't come out of the womb like looking for a drink. In fact, I drank successfully at the age of 15, 16, 17, without any major incidents. Somehow, I didn't kill anybody. I survived those days. It was that sort of youthful indiscretion stuff that we know a little bit about, probably, likely. I successfully made it through the military and college without really being much of a drinker. You know, even though it was part of the culture in both places, right? My trouble began after college when I started becoming successful in my chosen career field. Then the party was on. I had money, I had success, I had, you know, everybody was like, oh, Mike, way to go, good job, you know. We'd go out after work, we would drink, and from there, of course, drugs and other things. I guess the way Bill describes it, we have an allergy of the body, we have an obsession of the mind, and I think I have less of the allergy of the body and more of the obsession of the mind. I came to rely on alcoholism, I came to rely on alcohol to feel a certain way, right? When I wasn't feeling like the big success that everybody thought I was, alcohol helped me get over that, right? When I wanted to celebrate a big success, there was alcohol, my best buddy. What happened to me, and this doesn't happen to everybody, but this is what happened to me, was my life started kind of functioning on two tracks, right? And sometimes they ran parallel, and sometimes they were like way the hell off. But on one track was Michael, the successful person who got married, had children, right? Was an upstanding member of the community and, you know, pretended to really be happy. On this other track, though, was this other guy. Let's call him Mr. Hyde, for lack of a better description, who increasingly was kind of detaching from everybody else, seeking out places where I could get drunk or I could get high by myself, where people wouldn't bother me or nag me. And it was really quite interesting how those two lives kind of intersected one another periodically, usually with me being the workaholic and the rageaholic, right? All lubricated by alcohol or drugs. This made interacting with my wife or my children or my family or my sister or my brother or other people in my life a little bit more tolerable. Eventually, it made even going to work and interacting with my employers or my employees a little bit easier to deal with, right? Because as good as alcohol was late in the day, turns out alcohol for lunch was actually not a bad deal either. And little by little, drugs and alcohol for breakfast became like a really great idea. So I had these two different lives going on. And I thought everything was perfectly normal. Other people looked at me kind of like, what in the heck is going on here? And I lost a couple jobs along the way, right? Stormed out, angry, got fired. You know, hey, they just didn't understand me. That was the whole problem. Anyway, not to belabor that point, the thing of it is, the more isolated I became, the more I got into my own head about, you know, this drinking and this drug stuff, The more my ideas were so appealing to me, I guess what a lot of people experience, what I experienced, is kind of this this selfishness thing, this self-centeredness thing, that this egoic thing that Bill talks so much about as being oftentimes our number one problem, even ahead of resentments against other people. In my case, before I get to the resentment, there's all this stuff about how everything is about me. And I would get resentments against people who didn't understand that, or couldn't serve me, or do what I wanted, or live the way I thought they should live, right? Because I know everything. I'm a smart guy. I accomplished all these things. You should be listening to me. But they didn't, and you know, that really bothered me. So, of course, I would drink and use more. I would isolate more. But this whole business about being self-centered, being egotistical, all this stuff, it brought me to a place where literally anything that someone could say in my general direction became like a challenge. Like, what? You know, like, I'm going to kick your ass now because you can't talk to me that way. I got to this place which is described in other literature, non-AA literature, as taking everything personally, right? I was so into myself, my self-importance, and I was so, like, out there drinking and using that I couldn't conceive of anything occurring anywhere around me that wasn't somehow about me. And so, even if it had nothing to do with me at all, like I think we've all experienced a certain degree of road rage, right? Somebody's like driving ahead of us and they have the audacity to slow down and try to park their cars like in front of me. Asshole! You know, it's like this person is messing with my, you know, my thing on purpose. Because it's about me. Everything's about me. Well, I use that as a way to introduce a topic that Bill talks about, which is that actually AA does not claim to have the franchise, if you will, on God, or even the franchise on sobriety. In fact, Bill encourages us to look outside, to talk to our ministers and our rabbis and to other people about spirituality, about life, about things that are, you know, going on that could benefit us in some way. And I this taking it personal stuff, I found a very good understanding of what that's all about in a book called The Four Agreements by Don Miguel Ruiz. It's clearly not an AA-approved piece of literature, but I mention it when I share, because the second agreement in here is, it says, do not take anything personally, right? The idea being that no matter what a person says in your general direction or what opinion they offer about anything, the color of the sky, what kind of day it is, it's really about them, right? It's about how they're perceiving the world. It's really not about the thing at all. It's a way that we communicate. And I needed to understand that about me, that when I was rendering an opinion about you, or you, are you listening? No, just kidding. See, it's like, that's exactly how it works. That's just like how I am. I'm an alcoholic. It's like, pay the fuck attention to me. And it's like, I cannot take what other people do or say or what's going on in the world personally. That's me getting into my alcoholic thinking. And that pathway is taking me, guess where? Out that door and to a drink. Believe me when I say, sometimes there's a joke in AA that, you know, people endure all these hardships and then one day they break their shoelace and they're gone to have a drink. And it's like, what the? Are you kidding me? But I got shoelaces like that in my closet. They're just waiting for me to, right? I think you got some too, but the thing is, what I found out as kind of like an advanced subject on what's in AA-approved literature is these four agreements. The first one talks about how my word has got to have some meaning. It's got to have some power, right? I've got to have integrity in order for my word to actually mean anything, right? Anybody ever experienced that? Yeah, right. It's because in here, there's this interesting chapter way toward the back of the book where nobody ever goes. Let me dust it off here. It's called The Family Afterword, right? Right? Anybody ever check this out? It's so funny because when I first got here, bless you, there could not be more candy on that back table, unless maybe it was a bigger table. But the point is, there's actually, on page 134 of the big book, it actually starts on page 133, he thought all alcoholics should constantly have chocolate available for its quick energy value at times of fatigue. He added that occasionally in the night, a vague craving arose, which could be satisfied by candy. Many of us have noticed a tendency to eat sweets and have found, this practice beneficial. That's just a little footnote to what I want to talk about tonight, because sugar, right, is what ferments to become alcohol. So there's probably a vague connection there on a cellular level or, biological or some other crazy thing. And I note with some enthusiasm that after talking about candy in the big book, what do you suppose is the very next sentence? Anybody want to take a... Oh, come on now. A word about sex relations. Perfect, right? Okay, well, anyhow, I digress. The thing is about the family afterward and the power of my word, right? After years and years and years of drinking, I think I'm going to take my tie off. I was given permission by a little bit earlier here. This is... Thank you. I forgot, and in the pejorative sense, we forget, right, that we're basically cheaters, thieves, and liars, right? Anybody, not relate to one of those three or all of those three? And if you have a family, whether it's parents or siblings or children, you have practiced, like me, that lying, that cheating, and that stealing on them, oftentimes for years, right? I mean, it's not like yesterday I woke up, oh my God. No, I've actually been behaving like that for a long time. And the interesting thing that comes to mind in the context of the family afterward is this acceptance on our part that we have been causing, in a way, all those people around us to kind of stake out their position relative to us based on our insanity. You get that? What Bill says at the beginning of this chapter, if I bear with me here a moment, he says, cessation of drinking is but the first step away from a highly strained, abnormal condition. And that's like what goes on in a family situation, right? Or a work situation. Any situation where we've been interacting with other people, me especially. A doctor said to us, years of living with an alcoholic is almost sure to make any wife, or husband, of course, or child neurotic. Believe it, huh? The entire family is, to some extent, ill. So, they're used to me lying. They're used to me cheating. They're used to me stealing, right? Making promises that I don't keep, and I'm swearing it off, or I'll be there, I promise, or what the hell ever, right? Little, big, doesn't matter. I had a fabricated story. I had a justification. I had a rationalization for like every situation. And now, okay, I've stopped drinking. I'm all better now. What do you think? Are they going to buy into my like story this time? Not exactly. They've spent their lives, he calls it neurotic, and I think that that's probably an apt description, kind of responding and reacting to my insanity. They've had to kind of, like I said, stake out their position relative to how I'm behaving at any given moment. I come through that door, and they're like, who's it going to be this time? Oh, hi, Daddy, happy to see you. Or what, you know? Am I going to bite their heads off or scream because there's a bike in the driveway? What's it going to be tonight? Because clearly I reek of booze or whatever. And so to the extent that I'm getting better by coming to these meetings, by working the 12 steps, by working the 12 traditions, by having a sponsor, right? By having friends in the program, I'm developing a relationship with my higher power, and I'm beginning to see, particularly by the time I get to the fourth step, working on my inventory, I have been a real jerk. I've been worse than a jerk. I've been an a-hole of the first order. And I know that today. What am I going to lie to myself? Right on the chips it says, to thine own self be true. What that means is, stop lying to yourself, right? It's not some statement of egotism. It's about, hey, bullshit stops here, now, right now. Time to get real. But the people that we know, well, they don't, you know, unless they've been coming to Al-Anon or they've been doing something else or they start doing something else, they're not as quick to embrace our recovery, or they certainly weren't ready to embrace my recovery. Probably explains why I have two ex-wives. But I had that coming. You know, I was there for both of those marriages, for certainly for better or for worse. And I can accept that now. I've made amends. I have great relationships with my children. But I think the point that I'm trying to get to here is that there's a whole life after we get sober. Part of the joy, I think, of becoming sober is being able to relate to people like people, right? This second step here, or second agreement about not taking things personally, turns out to be kind of crucial to my process of staying sober today. And I say that because if I continued to look, you know, to react, I guess is the right word, to react to everything that I think people are saying about me, or getting defensive because I don't like the tone in somebody's voice or they're looking at me funny, I'm dangerously close to taking a drink. And this idea of not taking things personally allows other people the freedom to say and think and to be who they are and not immediately like slip into judgment about that. You know? Okay, you're entitled to your opinion, I understand. Usually I don't even say that, I just smile and, you know, let it go. Practice my invisibility. Just let the words float on by, because they have no power over me. They only have power over me if I react to them. If I internalize them, then they become my reality, and now I'm back on a bad road. And I have found that that's a much easier way to live a sober life, because it turns out that not just my family or my kids or both my parents are deceased now, but my mother certainly lived long enough to see me get sober. Thank God. My sister has 15 or 16 years of sobriety, thank God. The fact of the matter is, I run into people every day who, you know, in the course of living their own lives, I don't know them. I don't know nothing about them. Who would I be to judge them because of something that they said, right? They don't like the shade of blue of the sky. Yeah, let me give you my 2 cents worth on that, like you need that or something. You know, the fact of the matter is, it's much easier to be in the world, to be living a sober life. What's the expression in here? I think it's live and let live, right? So I just took like 15 minutes to explain what a 5-word slogan taught me about living my life. Because I went on I had to find out, live and let live. And I decided, you know what, I think I really want to experience those words, because that's very important to my, the fact that it's on a sign, that it's in this room, it's important, right? It was here long before I got here. Lance said that the program of sober living existed before he was born. Yeah, me too. People were talking about the stuff long before I came along, long before I was an alcoholic. It worked for them. Maybe it can work for me too. So that's important. There's a couple of other things I just want to toss out about the family afterward, because also here it talks about sort of the same willingness that we bring to the table as we're working our steps. We practice with our families, with our co-workers, with our friends, anybody who will still talk with us, people that we haven't even met yet, right? The idea is that going forward from this moment in our lives, we're not going to necessarily wear AA on our sleeve, right? I don't. But that doesn't mean that I'm any less of a sort of an ombudsperson, right? Not a missionary, I wouldn't quite go that far. But the thing of it is, I shouldn't be behaving in such a way that people are reacting to what I'm saying. Now, that's just my opinion. You all are free to interact with the world any way you want, but I prefer to live in such a way that people aren't like constantly pulling guns on me or trying to stab me, or the police aren't going to like pull me over. They all lost interest in me a long time ago. The reality is that I want to like be there to do good in the world. And if I am constantly agitating other people, that's not happening. And what Bill points to is we grow by our willingness to face and rectify errors and convert them into assets. Whoa! What a concept. That all that trash, all that crap, all those people that I mistreated, all that pain and suffering that I caused and that I have created in my own life and in the lives of other people can actually become an asset. I'm telling you, that's a powerful thought. Those were all errors, no question about it. But it's careful application of this program of Alcoholics Anonymous that if we go back now and we read about the 12 steps and, you know, back on page 63, for example, these other earlier pages, all that stuff, those experiences that we had, if I can just not drink one more day, every day is more experiences that I've done, things I've done sober, that I don't really want to go back and do those things drunk again. You know what I mean? It's like, I think I had enough of that. But every day I remain sober, I have a chance to re-experience a conversation with somebody that I may have had with somebody else, where this time I don't have to react. I don't have to get ugly. I don't have to be crazy. And so I can actually grow. And that's really what I'm into this thing for. Why I'm afraid of giving up my sobriety today is because I feel like I've actually grown in this program, right? But I suppose the downside of growth is the realization that I am still completely oblivious to so much. God. Yeah. That I still have a long way to go, right? So the opportunity cost of going out today is I'm not going to experience the growth that's still out there for me, because I'm going to go back to hiding out, being drunk, being a jerk, mistreating people. What kind of life is that? You know, for me, I don't need that today. The opportunities that sobriety have afforded me in these past almost 8 years are really phenomenal. You know, it took me a year of going to meetings. When I first came in 2002 and then again in 2008, I went to a couple of meetings a day. I was that desperate. And then over time, a meeting a day. And, you know, it's changed over the years. I've gone more, I've gone less, depending on how I feel. But the opportunities of being conscious, right, of being aware of what's going on in the world around me, of not being caught up in my own head all the time, right, has been phenomenal. Today, my higher power, whom I choose to call God, although I do not identify God as He the way that it is in the book. My God is not masculine nor feminine, yet both, right, just so that you know, has afforded me the opportunity to get training in a field of specialization that I love what I do. I've been able to start my own business. I've been able to raise capital to grow that business. I'm able to employ people today. I have an office in Santa Barbara as well as where I live. A lot of people today, no shit, they respect what I think and what I say. I don't know how that happened. Half the time I'm like, whoa, what the hell? People will ask me for my opinion, and it's like, oh, God. Yeah, there's this old joke about opinions. You might have heard this one. Advice. I'm sorry. Advice. Oh, about opinions. About 100 years ago, right? Going back to the second agreement, a guy named Mark Twain said, the problem with opinions are they tell you more about the person offering it. Which is very true. I mean, it was true 100 years ago, and guess what? It's like new spiritual teaching today. Whoa! The thing, it was advice. That's what I was getting to. Advice. Unasked for advice is always accepted as criticism. So, you know, a word to the wise here. I have learned to keep my mouth shut, because there is no situation so effed up that I can't make it worse by opening my mouth. Honest to God. It happened when I was drinking and using. Guess what? It's still true. But in my professional sphere of influence and involvement, I'm actually called upon for, you know, professional sounding opinions. And I'm actually prepared to give them today. The thing is, though, if I was drinking and using, I could kiss all that bye-bye. Because I cannot, you know, if I'm back to thinking about me, myself, and I, first and foremost, that's the end of everything for me. So these blessings of sobriety, which include, you know, being asked to come and speak to you, and having my own business and being self-employed, this ain't the end. As far as I'm concerned, today is truly the beginning, right, of the rest of my life. And I'm pretty excited about what's coming. And I never, ever want to forget, like, right behind me, like, right friggin' behind me. You know, okay, I'm going to digress and tell a really off-color joke. Sodomy used to be a crime in San Francisco, but they reduced it to a traffic violation. Really, following too close. Sorry, I'm from San Francisco, so I'm allowed. The thing of it is, right behind me is that other life, that other guy. You know, Mr. Hyde is still exists. He didn't go away. He's not gone. I didn't stop being an alcoholic just because I haven't had a drink for a few days. No. Never, ever am I going to delude myself that I'm cured. I got it. I'm there. I'm home. Woohoo! Nope, because I've been there before. And I see what happens to other people, that even for an instant, something happens in their lives that they can't quite deal with, and they reach for a drink. Anyway, appreciate you all coming out tonight. My name is Michael. Thank you for letting me.
Let's thank Mike B again, please. Now we'll turn the meeting back to our secretary.
Okay, I gotta learn how to stop this. Thank you, Mike, and thank you, Ted. I want to thank all of those who participated this evening. And I'll try to remember who they are because I lost my sheet. Ah, there you are. I want to thank Lauren and Trish for reading tonight. Pat for being our leader. No, that was Trish and Waylon, correct? Yeah, Trish and Waylon, I read. Okay. Billy for doing our raffle, and Joanne for the candy and treats again, and Jeffrey for making coffee and filling up the sugar and creamer containers. Also, I'd like to thank the people who helped tear down this room for our meeting tonight, Pat and Lisa and Trish, and I do need a couple of volunteers to help set the meeting back up, or the building back up. Okay, there's Lauren and Billy. Okay, thank you very much. And I especially want to encourage any newcomers to keep coming back, as well as the rest of you. So thank you all for being here. And I believe Mike will be available for comments here afterwards. And thank you all for being here. And who's going to lead us out in a meeting? But John G. is going to lead us out in a meeting.
John!
Sounds a little fishy to me.
Gee, John.
Thanks, Luke.
Moment of silence. God.
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Amen.
Keep coming back. It works when you work it.
Oh, I'm
alternative
energy consumer.
You can have a center stage. You've got to take care of his business.
Yeah, let me. I just get my stuff out of your way.
Oh, not a problem.